You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce the Earth Station Trek crew, Keith Johnson.
LLAP.
Alan Seiler.
Hello. I don't know what to say. I'm so unprepared.
Veronica Dashiell.
Hi.
And we're joined by a special guest this week, Jim Beard of Becky Books. Ooh. Welcome, Jim.
Welcome. Ooh. Guys, I am so excited to be here today to talk some Star Wars.
No, it's Lost in Space.
This all day.
We can do that too.
Yes.
Oh wait, I thought this was the That's No Moon, That's an Earth, That's an Earth Station podcast.
That's right.
Somebody lied to me.
I think we know who.
I'm going to steal that idea for an April 1st one year when our show falls on April 1st.
my royalties are, you know, very fair, yeah. I think.
It'll be a big percentage of what we make on this show. Don't worry. All right.
Johnny? What?
Nothing.
Go ahead.
Way before anybody's time.
Keith, we got some This Week in Trek this week.
Just two quick things that I can only do this week. I'm gonna go in reverse order. The first one I think is pretty cool. As everybody who's into science fiction and math and all this kind of crap knows, today is March 14th, 314, which is of course the value of pi, 3.14.
Yes.
What in the world does that have to do with Star Trek? Well, as you remember, there's a famous episode where Regek / Jack the Ripper was terrorizing the Enterprise in the episode Wolf in the Fold. And when he abandoned the body of Mr. Hengist, the spirit took over the ship's computer, and Spock came up with a really cool way to get him out of the ship's computer. He issued a priority one message to the computer and ordered the ship's computer to calculate to the last value, the value of pi. And then the entity goes, no. And then he, and Spock, of course.
I love it when he says, pie, everybody, pie.
Right. And it's just a cool usage. Spock, of course, informs everybody, probably 99% of the audience who knew that pi is a number without ending. It's irrational, no ending and no repetitions. I just thought that was a funny connection to that value, because I've been getting texts all day long about Happy Pi Day.
We didn't have any pie today.
All right. Yeah. What else you got?
And the other one, real quick. Now, this is obviously the big one. It was posted on Facebook and everybody knows about it. But March 11th, a super important event that people talked about, people still talked about. It spawned a lot of fondness and even a lot of text and Facebook posts about it today. But enough about my birthday. But I'm pumped.
Happy birthday, Keith.
Thank you. Boy, I'm not.
Please, Dr. Josh.
I'm not begging for it, have I? Obviously, our own Charles posted about this. March 11th, which is so cool to me. March 11th, 1964. One Eugene Wesley Roddenberry, a former pilot, Air Force or military pilot, commercial pilot, and police officer, sat down and put to paper for the first time the ideas for the show that would become Star Trek. Real quickly, what I found interesting, and Charles posted this, and I looked at it real quick. His idea was for a science fiction show. He called it action adventure science fiction that would have a regular cast. One of them, the ideas he penned was The Next Cage, about a human who gets put into a zoo-like environment and put on exhibit. Another one, which I thought was interesting, was The Day Charlie Became a God. And to summarize it, it said infinite power given to a very infinite man. So obviously we're talking about the cage / the menagerie for the first one, Charlie X for the second one. This one is wild. He had a title called President Capone. Yeah, a parallel world where Al Capone wins the gangland wars and rules the planet.
That's not too far off from a piece of the action, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say
that's exactly.
Clearly, he's got these ideas that he's just, you know, waiting to use.
Right? Exactly. And another one that I don't think ever came to fruition, it was called To Skin a Tyrannosaurus. A modern man is reduced to what clubs and primitive weapons in the year 1 million BC, which is weird. And then
that idea kind of filters into a lot of other episodes where they're forced to you know, make weapons and use crude type of things. So that little idea, you know, worked its way out there.
Yeah. Gorn, did you say?
I said Gorn.
Yeah, even the idea of someone going back in time and becoming more savage sort of comes back with Spock later.
Right. And the last two, which I find interesting, the title is also a phrase. There's an episode he penned called The Women. And The Women. And what he listed was, in the vein of Old West hanky panky, women brought to brought to basically be wives. So it was a riff on that. And the very last one I find very interesting, which makes sense. It was called The Coming, an alien world, completely alien world, yet an oddly gentle and impressive man is crucified by the populace for unspecified sins. Which is Christ and the crucifixion on another planet. And I thought those were some really interesting ideas.
Yeah, that sort of evolves in the direction of Bread and Circuses, even though that episode goes in a different way.
Right.
Like, it's still like the episode next door to Bread and Circuses, like what it could have been if they'd gone that route.
Yeah. Exactly. So just the big thing, and none of us would be here doing this right now if he hadn't sat down and done that 60 years ago this week.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that we know a date.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he just like wrote on paper, and paper is so fragile, and it's just incredible to me that we know when this happened.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought of that, Alan.
Yeah. I mean, imagine keeping all your records, even about a show that hasn't even gone yet. Just the fact that someone had to hold on to that piece of paper for 60 years. I mean, if we had to put together like a comprehensive history of our artistic stuff, like it'd be a nightmare because it's all like thrown away and lost and torn in half and not filed right.
Yeah. Luckily there's now digital stuff. So we can search Facebook for, hey, look, we just did our first show at the Puck and Puppet Show.
Yeah. Unless Facebook goes out of business.
Yes.
Because like that's one.
I have many MySpace photos that are just gone.
That the upside of having hard copies of things in a filing cabinet is that you're not dependent on someone else's service.
Yep.
All right. I always found it amazing that Gene never let go of ideas. Like, and you can see these, you know, like Ilea Decker idea, you know, is Deanna Troi and Riker, you know. So there's all these little through lines, you know. When he grabbed onto something, he didn't want to let it go. And by God, he was going to use it somewhere at some point.
Right.
I always thought that was a very interesting trait of Gene's.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, we've got a few comments. Our buddy Tigerblade 2002 says, hey.
Hey, Wayne.
And said, hey, Alan. Hey. You were missed last week. And then Elaine Sweatman says, happy birthday, Keith.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you.
Shouldn't have thought about
it. Keith, I have you beat. My birthday is Star Wars Day.
Wow.
Oh, really?
My first contact, I win.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I have a saying about my birthday. May the 4th be with you. So.
I still win.
All right, Jim. I mean, thank you for joining us today. Now,
Veronica, that's a really good one.
You run Becky Books. Tell us what that is, and I mean, about some of the. I know recently you did a book that our buddy Bobby Nash was talking about when he was here, Galloping Around the Cosmos, and you've got another Star Trek book on the way. I mean, tell us how Becky Books came about.
Well, I'm going to try to keep this real upbeat. So it is. It's named after my late wife, Becky. We're coming up on 5 years that she's been gone. One of the ways that I drag myself back up from the hell that is losing a spouse was to channel some energy into my publishing. I was already doing a little bit of it, but without any kind of a, you know, name to the company. I do have a little company called Flinch Books with my publishing partner, John Bruning. But this was stuff for me to just sort of do my own thing. And just one day I just said, you know what? I I'm going to use her spirit, and inspiration to create a little, publishing company. The unofficial motto of it is cool books she would have loved. Mm. And that's kind of my guiding, you know, force here is that every time I come up with an idea and say, is that going to be, a Becky Books book, is I kind of ask, you know, her spirit, and I think like, yeah, she would have really loved that. She would have said, "Ooh, yeah," you know, and then I know I'm on the right track. Hmm. Star Trek, the original series, was her most favorite TV show. Dark Shadows came in very, very close after that. But the classic Star Trek, we watched a lot of stuff after original series, but there was one day where I remember she turned to me and she said, you know what? All I really like is classic Trek. You know, she said, this stuff's okay. But she said, I realize that now. That's what I really, really love is classic Trek. So I did. I have a little series called Memories from Today's Grown Up Kids, where I basically get a bunch of writers together and tell them to write essays about their childhoods, but with themes. So the very first one was about growing up with G.I. Joe. The second one is Running Home to Shadows, which is growing up as a kid watching Dark Shadows. That book is so her. It's that funny. the third one is about watching Japanese TV shows. Okay. All of the great imported Japanese TV shows we got from like the 60s up through the 90s. The fourth one is D20 or Die, which is playing all the great old school tabletop role playing games from like the early 70s up until about the end of first edition D&D, which is like late 80s. And then finally, I hit the one that's it had been on my list for so long. And I said, OK, the time is right. And we did classic Star Trek. So it's several essays from writers about their introduction to classic Star Trek. The rule was that they didn't have to be there for the first run, but it had to be purely about classic Trek because that's what she was a fan of. Mm. And that's galloping around the cosmos. And I no insult here. Everybody get the reference, get the title. It's a Star Trek quote.
Say it again, please.
Galloping around the cosmos. It's a Star
From
Trek.
Star Trek quote. 2?
It is.
Yeah. I wanted him here with me not galloping around the cosmos with his father.
Yeah. Kirk or McCoy says galloping around the cosmos is a game for the young.
Okay. I was close. I was in the ballpark.
The whole point is that a game for the young, because every essay is about being a kid and watching classic Star Trek.
Nice.
We got an incredible lineup. There are so many writers in that book that went on to become somehow professionally connected with Star Trek. So a lot of them are Star Trek novelists. And I was just so lucky. We had a really fantastic time on that book, and I'm super, super proud of it.
Well, what was your introduction to Star Trek?
So, I'm basically a first, syndication baby.
Okay.
I was born in 65. I was around when Star Trek was on, but I don't have any memories of watching it first run, although I know it was on in the house. I had older brother and older sister, so I'm sure it was on, and I'm sure my dad probably tuned in, you know, every once in a while. But I saw it in that first syndication. So, first syndication, I think, is like very quickly after the show ends. I don't think there's a big gap there. So I'm going to be safe and say maybe around 1970 is when I probably first saw it. And I knew, even knew by the tender age of 5 years old, that I loved science fiction. And there was this incredible science fiction TV show. And I was the only one who watched it. Nobody else in the family wanted to watch it. And in fact, my sister, if she was passing by the room, would make fun of it. And it just, you know, if it was during the title sequence, she had to do the women singing, you know, the wordless, you know, stuff in the background of that. She had to mock that. There's a famous thing in my family where, I was watching Enterprise Incident, and at the end of it, Kirk goes back to the Enterprise, and he's still got the ears from being a Romulan.
Yeah,
and they're on the bridge, and McCoy says, "Jim, why don't you come down to sick bay so I can bob those ears of yours?" And my sister, smart ass that she was, she goes, "Well, why doesn't he just do that with Spock?" I was mortified. I literally turned at her, and if like looks could kill, like you know, here's me all of like whatever I was, 6-7 years old, you know, like, "You're so stupid. You don't know anything about, you know, Star Trek." So that's my big childhood memories. I was the ringleader of the kids in the neighborhood. I would always decide what we were all going to play. And if we weren't playing with action figures, we were doing a little bit of role playing, as only kids can do. So I would always say, like, "Let's play Godzilla movies," you know. But every once in a while, I would say, "Let's play Star Trek." And the other kids in the neighborhood just never really got it. They sort of knew the things, but I got to tell you something. It's kind of hard to play Star Trek because it's not necessarily, it's not like playing Godzilla. You know what I mean? And you had to come up with a way to do the transporter, but how do you do that as a kid? So we would do things like find a something round, like a garbage can lid, maybe.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Right. You know, and we'd stand on top of that because that was the round platform. And then we'd have to like make the sound and then start to dim our eyes until our eyes were almost closed. We'd really quick across the yard and maybe to the backyard and then quick jump on another, you know, whatever, and then go zzz, and then open our, you know, open our eyes.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's funny. Commitment.
I was obsessive compulsive, you know, and so I had to be the ringleader. So that's how I played Star Trek. So you know, a lot of really fun memories, and I was obsessed with it. If I remember correctly, it was on Sunday. It was like Sunday late afternoon or something like that. And I would jump in my dad's lazy boy chair and I'd plunk myself down. And I'd take out my copy of The Making of Star Trek, the paperback Making of Star Trek that my dad had bought me. And as soon as the title card came up, I'd quickly turn to those pages in the back that had all of the episodes listed to find it. And I don't know how much that enhanced my experience, but I would sit there and look at it. But it was frustrating because there were episodes that would come on that are not in the book. And I didn't understand what the hell was going on.
Right.
And it took me a long, long time to realize that book originally came out while the show was still on the air.
Yeah.
It doesn't have third season episodes in it. And if a third season episode came on, I was like, why isn't this in the book? It literally hurt my head.
You know, Jim, it's funny. You talked about how Star Trek is a show that's difficult to play games with. And I'm sure you remember because you see all the time on the internet, people posting pictures of those really kind of horrible Star Trek toys that were supposed to be Star Trek toys, like the plastic gun that fired the little plastic, the disc, you know, the flat disc. And they slap Star Trek on it.
Look at the cover of my book.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. That's sorry. Good point. Yeah, exactly. There, I forgot about it because you have the helmet too, which is another thing. And what in the heck does that have to do with Star Trek? But that was a toy that they just slapped Star Trek on all kinds of junk back in the day.
Everything those kids have are those ones that they slapped. Now, I was lucky because I had the Ertl model kits.
Okay.
And one of the cool ones is I think it was called the Exploration Set. It was a model of the phaser, the tricorder, and the communicator.
Mm. Oh, cool. Nice.
But they were models, but I was the kind of kid that I didn't just build a model and set it on the shelf. I played with models, and they always, fell apart. But that was really cool because they're smaller than what they're supposed to be, but they still had, the tricorder, the thing flipped up and it had a little screen and it had a little image of Baylock on it, and the communicator would flip open. The phaser didn't have any moving parts, but again, it wasn't tiny, tiny, but it was, it was perfect for a kid.
For a kid, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So I had those and I would literally take those outside and run around, with those.
That's awesome.
So I didn't have the horrible knockoff stuff that was all official, but that stuff that you couldn't identify.
Yeah. Cause they would just take toys they already had in production and put Star Trek on them. Yeah. Like old Remco stuff would until Mego came along.
And I had the Mego Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock. I got my Captain Kirk for I think it was my first communion gift. I went through first communion and my dad said, you want to go to the store and pick something out? And we went over to Kmart and I got the Captain Kirk. And then I think it was maybe for my first confirmation, I got Spock. And that's the only two I ever had, but I just, I love them. No, I take that back. I got the Neptunian. So, see, Keith, I did actually have one of those things that wasn't really in the show, but still said Star Trek. The Neptunian was a really cool figure, but it's like doesn't resemble anything in the show.
Yeah.
Not even slightly.
Yeah. And you mentioned the making of Star Trek, and Star Trek was a little unusual at that time because there wasn't a lot of behind the scenes books about TV shows. I think for a lot of us, that was one of the first behind the scenes TV about TV shows books that we had. Did that have any impact on you? Because I grew up and started, publishing nonfiction Star Trek books.
Yeah. Not necessarily on a conscious level, but the more I think back to all the books that I had, and the excitement that I felt from them. I was really lucky. I had the Concordance, which I still have. I had the technical manual, which just even today, if I think about it, my hands start to shake because it's just such an awesome book.
Yes.
Yeah. I loved diagrams. The making of Star Trek had the like set diagrams in it. And that just blew my mind. That's a really great question. Although I haven't really done anything like a technical manual or whatever,
right?
I still feel like those books inspired me to create something that I hope people would feel the same excitement from. Mm. I think the closest I ever got is that I have a series of books called DC Jones and Adventure Command, and they're basically my version of G.I. Joe and the Adventure Team, the toys from the 70s. And in those books, in my books, I have like fake instruction sheets. So every so often throughout the book, I had my artist, he would draw out like literally an instruction sheet for one of the toys that doesn't really exist in it. And I would stick in, like the caption and an arrow pointing to things and like, put this in this slot. We had a fantastic time with it. So now it's really occurring to me that, I guess I did do that sort of thing because I love stuff like that.
Right. Now, there's a lot of stories in Galloping Around the Cosmos. Is there one that really jumped out at you that you didn't write?
Boy, see now, you know, of course, all those writers are listening to this right now. All right, Beard, pick mine. Honestly, no. What I have is what I came away with is sort of more general type of things. And the biggest one is, and it's the same through all of the books in that series, is that no matter when those people who wrote those essays, no matter when they were born, when they grew up, how they got into Star Trek, there are these threads, these common threads that go through. And that's what I really, really love. They can be in different eras and in different parts of the country, or maybe even in England or whatever. You get these commonalities through them, and it's really just amazing. You know what? I'll call out one essay, and that's Alan J. Porter's. He grew up in England. And his story is really amazing because if I remember this correctly, he saw a Star Trek comic strip before he ever saw the actual show.
Yeah, the UK comics.
Yeah, and they changed, I think this is Alan's, they changed the name of Kirk. It was Kurt, K-U-R-T, Captain Kurt. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the name of his essay. It's like traveling with Captain Kurt or something like that. That's really amazing that everybody may go, oh, I know what it's like to have grown up with Star Trek, you know, but it's like, do you know what it's like to have grown up with Star Trek in a different country?
Right.
You know, we think of Star Trek as very American, even though it has had an international cast, you know, supposedly. But, well, you know what I mean? It's like, Walter Koenig's not really from Russia and so on and so forth. Jimmy Doohan's not really from Scotland, you know, technically, but that's something that's really amazing. Alan's in a couple of the books, and he always had such an interesting POV on the theme because it opened my eyes to, you know, to come out of myself and realize, you know, how different it was for a kid in England or wherever. In the one about the Japanese TV shows, I have a lady who grew up in Germany and saw Japanese TV shows there. I mean, you think it might be have been odd for us as kids to watch Japanese TV shows here, but think about it filtered through Germany. So there's some really, really unique experiences in there. And one of the cool things for me as a publisher and an editor and putting these books together is when the writers hand it in and I read it and I go, this is really great. And they say something like, Jim, I can't tell you how happy am I to get that story out of my head and onto the page, you know. Right. And they said, as I was writing it, stuff came up that I didn't even really remember until I literally started thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And so I guess in a way, these books are like a kind of therapy.
Right. They're going to be paying you to write. Childhood. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, different experiences, I mean, even across decades. I grew up watching Star Trek in the 80s and into the 90s growing up. But it seems like everyone I've ever talked to, no matter what decade or wherever you grew up watching Star Trek, everyone played that game where you try to guess the episode before the title comes up and see how quick you can figure out what episode you're watching, which is kind of ruined now by streaming services and things like that, because the TV just tells you what you're watching.
Becky and I used to do that before we owned them on, you know, on Blu-ray, whatever. Right. I don't even know what channel it would have been on, you know, but it would start up. And, you know, isn't it like a version of Name That Tune?
Right.
You have, how many seconds can you name that Star Trek episode? And I hate it because we would get to ones where I didn't know them that well. Like there were certain ones that I don't know if they didn't show them when I was a kid or they were not in heavy rotation. A good friend of mine in high school, we had this joke about every freaking time we turned Star Trek on, it was Doomsday Machine. You know? And you got sick of it. Oh, it's a fantastic episode. But, you know, like every other time you turn Star Trek on, it's freaking Doomsday Machine again, or it's Trouble with Tribbles. Stop it. You know,
right.
But so something would come on and, you know, Kirk's on the bridge and he says, you know, we're, you know, orbiting planet, whatever. And I turn to Becky and go, what in the hell episode is this? She go, that's Requiem for Methuselah. Duh. You know, like, well, you know what, my dear? I probably saw that once as a kid.
Right.
You know, Requiem for Methuselah is one of her most favorite episodes. And how many times does that end up high on lists of people's, you know, favorite episodes? But it's a shame because it has an amazing character in it, Raina. Mm-hmm. You know, and Methuselah, you know, what's his name?
Flint.
What?
Flint.
Yeah. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. I'm older than you. There's some amazing characters in that. But I remember, like, it goes into it and Spock doing his, like, you know, this is a Matisse that has never been recorded. And this is a Brahms lullaby or whatever. And I'm like, I don't remember any of this.
That is a joy, though, when you come across a Star Trek episode that you can't remember what happens next. Yep. It's almost like watching a brand new one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's me every single time.
It would, you know, an episode would start and I would go, please let it be Enterprise Incident. Because I loved it when I first saw it. But that was not one that I saw a lot as a kid. So you always hoped it would be one that you really liked because you don't get to see it that much. Back in those, you know, days of the cavemen when we couldn't pick what we watched.
Jim, when we come back from our break, I want to ask you about, sometimes we talk about, how do you view those Star Trek episodes as an adult versus how you viewed some of them as a kid? You know, has it changed? Because I think that's a very interesting thing.
Well, that's a great segue, Keith. So let's take a quick break for a couple of commercials and we'll be right back.
What you gonna do, brothers and sisters, when thousands of geeky fans descend on Atlanta for 5 days and nights of the grandest con of them all? You can prepare by training, eating your vitamins, saying your prayers, and checking out the Dragon Con Report each and every month leading up to the show. Watch or listen and let Dragon Con Mania run wild on you!
And we're back.
Now, hey,
Keith, what were you going
to
ask?
I feel like I need to go and take a shower after
those are great commercials.
So if you're listening to the podcast, you did not get to see the commercial break. Okay. So you should go to our YouTube and watch them because they're hilarious.
I feel all, like, weird inside now.
So like you, I started watching the original series when I was maybe 6 or 7. And I also have 2 older siblings, 2 older brothers, and I was always watching Star Trek. And I don't actively dislike, we've talked about this before, I don't actively dislike a whole bunch of Star Trek throughout the decades. I can name the number of shows I truly despise, maybe on 1 or 2 hands, and the children's show lead is probably at the top of the list. But there's episodes that say, like, Charles Loves, which is, The Empath, that I never have cared for. But as a kid, it was just okay. But as an adult, even if I don't love it, I see more in it. Metamorphosis is another one. It was fine when I was a kid. But as I've gotten older, it means so much more to me. And it's funny you talk about Requiem for Methuselah, because Requiem for Methuselah gets, for people who don't like it, it gets wrecked by some real plot problems, such as Kirk falling in love with Raina in like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Kirk spending more time trying to make time with a woman when his crew is going to die in like 2 or 3 hours. You know, the things that don't make sense, but it's one of those episodes where even though some of the logic makes no sense, it's an awesome emotional episode, which I appreciate much more as an adult than as a child. Do you have some episodes like that where as you've gotten older, they're better?
Yeah. I mean, no surprise. as a kid, I looked to the science fiction elements. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted to see Gorns, you know, I wanted to see the Klingons ships, you know, and stuff like that. I wasn't really overly picking up on all the, you know, the social commentary and things like that. I knew that there was more going on in that show than I was getting. And then, right. You know, as I matured, mm-hmm. you know, I started to realize it. Charles, Becky loved The Empath. Mm. That was wow. one where she and I just really just parted ways.
You know? Yeah, because, I'm
yeah. Fan. It was a hard slog for me. I realized I know what they were trying to do, but to me it was like the minimalist sets was like watching an episode of Lost in Space where they just hung black drapes, you know, and called it a room.
I also like Lost in Space.
Yeah. Well, I like Lost in Space too. But you know, Keith, to your point, I don't actively dislike or hate any classic Star Trek episode. Yeah. There are some that I don't like as much as others, you know.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of Trouble with Tribbles, and everybody in the world supposedly loves Trouble with Tribbles.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's rare.
It's seeing it one too many times and and realizing that it gets kind of dumb, you know, like it's I think for me there's too much humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I loved iMUD. But that has changed over the years because now I realize like it's maybe a little bit too much comedy, you know, it's too much of an opportunity for Shatner to try to be funny. You know, and you can tell that like he's just going out of his way to like, oh, my God, I finally get to do all the funny stuff that I, you know, ever wanted to do. As a kid, I did not appreciate City on the Edge of Forever. If you look at it, it's not really like that exciting for a kid. It's really not. Today, I just eat it up. All of the little details, the feeling of Kirk and Spock being trapped, you know, in that time. Spock working on the stuff just to create the, what is it? The mnemonic circuit, yeah, you know, or whatever. Circuit. Yeah. Is just amazing. And it's got to be one of the hardest hitting endings of any Star Trek episode. You know, it wipes me out when Spock says, he knows, doctor, he knows.
Yes.
It's just so freaking amazing. Things really do change, you know. I still like a lot of the ones that I liked as a kid. I mean, I still like Arena. I don't think anything has ever changed in my feelings about Arena. Although this is funny, I not too long ago I watched it, and the whole beginning part of it was like strange to me. Like, I must have, as a kid, come in a little bit later when they're already down into that one big area and the, you know, they're getting bombed, as it were. To your point, yeah, things change where you appreciate little bits more and more. Like, you might like all of the gladiators and sword fighting in Bread and Circuses, but as a kid, do you really pick up on that ending? You know, right. The whole thing about not the sun in the sky, you know?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Before we get too far away, I've got a couple of quick comments I want to grab.
Okay.
Michael Phillips says, Star Trek first aired in 1969 in the UK, and it was a summer replacement for another iconic sci-fi show, Doctor Who.
Woo-hoo!
Wow. And he went on to say, my brother and I used to make short sci-fi films on Super 8 inspired by Star Trek and other things. Not even a shoestring budget, though. Wow. And then most importantly, he said, I love The Empath, too. And that he's a Tribble skeptic. And then our buddy Wayne, Tiger Blade 2002, chimed in. I agree with Mr. Beard's point of view, from the point of view that you have to grow older to really appreciate some of the episodes.
To whoever said they love the empath, may the great Becky of the Galaxy smile upon them. And she is, I know. We're talking about the empath and Requiem for Methuselah. She's happy at this.
Yeah. I remember as a kid a couple of things that I heard, and they didn't resonate until I was older. In The Savage Curtain, which is, you know, the episode where they meet Lincoln and stuff. What is such an incredibly cool line is when they meet the image of Sarak, he looks at Kirk and he says, "We were not aware of humans in my time." And then he says, "I am pleased to see there are differences. Together, may we be better than the sum of our parts." And if that's not Itik right there, Star Trek, I love that. To see somebody as different and instantly say, "This is cool, you're different from me." Not, "This is horrible, you're different from me."
Right. Die. Cool.
Yeah.
My favorite line of his is, Spock, help me, Spock. Becky and I had this language that people who are married, we were married for, you know, together for 31 years.
Mm.
We, like many people who are married or together for that long, you start to have sort of like a language all your own, you know. Mm. And ours was pretty much made up of movie and television quotes. Like, I could say something, she would know exactly what I was talking about. So many of them are from classic Trek. I mean, absolutely. So many. And one of them is, Spock, help me, Spock. I mean, literally, we could just be at home, you know, whatever, and I could literally just from the other room go, Spock, help me, Spock. And, she, you know, I could hear her laughing in the other room because it's just one of those funny little things. If there was anybody listening in at that moment, they probably thought we were loons. Or, you know,
they finally flipped. You know,
going on about, but, you know, I mean, I love Shore Leave. I mean, Shore Leave may be my most favorite episode, but really? We could use a quote from it that most people probably would never quote from it. It's when Finnegan's down on the ground, Kirk's thrown him or whatever, and Kirk kind of sidles up to him and kind of nudges him with his boot, and he goes, can you feel that? And literally, Becky would just say that out of the blue. You know, I mean, it's like, most people wouldn't even know that was a Star Trek quote, but I knew exactly what it was and why she was saying it. And, you know, that's right. Just how we were.
So you're giving Chuck ideas. He's now going to randomly poke me and say, "Did you feel that?" And be like, "Oh no, I'm just doing that because it's a Star Trek quote. And I love Star Trek."
You've broken me back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, Jim, Jim, I want you to talk a little bit about the upcoming book.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm taking a chance and doing another nonfiction Star Trek book, and this one's a little different. It's called Women Take the Con, and that's CONN. Thank you, not KHAN. Although that would have made an interesting book too. Just like it says, it's Star Trek essays by women writers. And what does it say on the cover though is, it's about the women, the female characters.
Mm.
So it's 20. I think it's 25 essays. Me and the editors, Summer Brooks and Rich Hanley, we put our heads together and we picked out 25. Of the female characters from classic Star Trek. And I got to tell you, it was not easy because how do you narrow it down, you know, to 25? I mean, you had to have Uhura and Chapel and Rand, you know, in there, but from where you go. So I got to be the final say, but they were suggesting how many different ones. We actually pulled from some of the movies too, like Savik is in there and Ilea. Like I insisted that, oh my God, her name just flew out of my head. The female Klingon from Day of the Dove.
Mara.
Mara. Thank you. Like who the heck talks about Mara and, you know, at all, really? So every single one of these writers took a character and I said, just dig in.
Nice.
Talk about what's on the screen, what's implied, what you feel is implied. you know, are they in, you know, did they, the characters reappear in novels, you know, what was great about what we saw, what was not so great about what we saw, what could have been better. And they just took it all apart. And I got to tell you, this is the most amazing, amazing book. So again, it's female writers writing about the female characters. We're working on it right now. It is actually in with my formatter. She just emailed me today and said, Jim, this one might take a week or two longer than most of the books that I do for you. She said, because, oh my God, all those footnotes for a formatter for a print edition. Yeah, I guess it just sort of, and I said, I warned you. Come on, I warned you. Every single essay has footnotes, but it's not as studious or scholarly. It is in a way, but it is also fun. I made sure that Summer and Rich communicated that to the writers, that it could not be dry, you know, you can have some fun with it. And some of the writers took that a little bit more to heart, you know, than others, pointing out funny little things like why does, I'm really just drawing blanks here. The female lawyer from Court Martial.
A real Shaw.
Thank you. You know, why does she do this? You know, why does she say what she says at the end? You know, she's a modern woman. Why does she say that thing about, you know, the kissing the captain at the end? That, you know, that sort of thing, and kind of having a little bit of fun with it. So it's going to be a very different book from Galloping Around the Cosmos, but that's okay, because I want to try to hit as many different types of Star Trek fans with these books, you know, as we can. So if everything goes well, that should be in April.
Okay.
If you go to the Jim Beard and Becky Books page on Facebook, we'll always be doing updates there.
Okay.
And that'll be, you know, when it goes live, we'll drop the announcement for it there. This has been a little bit of a long time in coming. The book actually had a different cover and a different title. Oh. And this little tiny company called Paramount CBS objected to our cover.
Okay. And our
title, and we had to go back to the drawing board and change the title and work up a new cover, but then they approved it. But that's okay. We're very, very happy, you know, with what we came up with. And, it's really what's inside that book that's important. Not necessarily, you know, the cover. So that's what the new book is.
And something that you and Alan both have in common is that you both run publishing companies. And I'm curious really from both of you. I mean, what, as a fan, you grow up, you're reading the books, you're watching the shows. I mean, what possesses you to take the leap from just consuming the books to, you know, facilitating them?
Possessed is the right word. You really want to say, what the heck were you thinking, Jim? Charles, it goes back to what I said about being the kid and I needed to be the ringleader.
Hmm.
I needed to be the boss of all the kids, you know. I needed to be the friendly angel, Keith, of the neighborhood, you know.
The first positive reference to that episode I've ever heard.
Hail, hail, fire and
stuff. All the angels. Yeah. It really was. I've been a professional writer for 22 years now, and I've worked with a lot of publishers, and I've enjoyed all of my experiences. But I got to the point where I said, okay, I want to try to do this on my own. I want to be the one that says what the cover looks like. I want to be the one who says what this or that, you know, is like. And kind of dictate all of that. So, John and I created Flinch Books to do that. And that's a completely, fiction publisher right now. We do a lot of pulp style fiction in there, and we're having a great time with it. We're up to 13 publications now. We're working on number 14 and 15, literally right now. And then Becky Books was a way to do things that I wouldn't necessarily do at Flinch Books, which really included nonfiction. And Becky Books is, I think, is predominantly nonfiction now. And yeah, again, it's just, it's like, who doesn't want to be the head of their own company, right?
Yep.
I do know some people who don't want to, you know, but, and I still work with other publishers, especially if I do like a licensed project, you know, and I look forward, to that, because I'm not at a level where I or John and I can get licensed projects under, you know, as teeny tiny little small press publishers. So, you know, I know that to be able to do some of the characters that I'd like to do, I need to go to companies that do have the rights to do, you know, certain characters. And that's always fun too, but there's nothing like the feeling of getting a book that you created and you, you know, brought to term and you, you know, went into labor with. Ladies, please forgive me for those stupid references, but, there's nothing like that. Opening that box from Amazon, taking your book out and going, you know, I did this. I mean, it's, you know, after all these years and all the books, it never, ever, ever gets old. It's the most amazing feeling. I can only imagine that's, it's something slightly akin to giving birth, you know, having a child, you know, that you say, you know, I created this thing, you know, I put everything into it and here it is. And now it's going to go out into the world and other people are going to read it now and talk about it and, you know, give it 1-star reviews, you know, on Amazon.
In my brain, I'm picturing that you birthed this child and then it immediately went off to college and people are rating your child immediately. That's what's going through my brain right now, just to share.
I was
going to
say, I have a 17-year-old daughter and putting out books has got to be easier.
I might challenge you on that thing. When you get an email from CBS Paramount that and they're not very happy with you, I'm going to challenge you on that. Okay. That's not a good day at all. That's the day that your kid, you know, writes on the walls that you just painted with permanent markers,
right?
You know.
Well, where can people find Becky Books?
Oh wait, what's Alan's story? We missed Alan's story.
Oh, well, let me get Bobby's comment. Bobby Nash says
that Bobby Nash
never gets old.
Yay!
Hey, yeah. Bobby.
It's appropriate, Alan, that you read Bobby's, because it's kind of like what Bobby sounds like.
And I want to get Wayne's last comment. He says, so far, I've only read 2 nonfiction books on Star Trek, The Physics of and Star Trek in History. Mm-hmm. This podcast has intrigued my curiosity for more, and your books are definitely on my list.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. You know, if you read them, I hope that you enjoy them. I hope you see what we were trying to do. And if you feel strongly about it, and good or bad, here it comes, folks. It's the begging for reviews part of the podcast. Yeah, it's talk about the struggle. You know, the struggle is real, as they say. And I do totally get it. You know, it's very easy to just, you know, click on the stars and you're done kind of a thing. But you would not believe what it means to writers, editors, artists, and publishers to actually get an actual review. Doesn't have to be very long. It can literally be 2 sentences. You know, it could literally be, I like the book. You know, I mean, you kind of want to hear a little bit more than that, but, but, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm thrilled just to know that somebody read the book, you know, regardless of if they tell us how they felt about it, because that's what it's all about right there. You know, these books are for Star Trek fans who want to, you know, read more about Star Trek, you know, who want to read about other people talking about Star Trek. I guarantee in Galloping Around the Cosmos, you're going to see yourself in many of those essays. You're going to go, my God, I did that same thing too. I made, you know, Vulcan ears out of Play-Doh and stuck them on my own ears. This guy did that same thing. I can't believe it. We lived on different sides of the country, you know.
Mine were cardboard.
I was about to say, we're cardboard.
I never went that far at all. I just ran around with the, you know, the phaser and all that. I never did Spock ears.
Well, where can people find Becky books?
Oh, so Amazon.com. If you, you know, just go under books and put in my name and my Amazon author page will come up. I have things, if they're a series, I have them grouped as series. So if you find Galloping Around the Cosmos, you're going to see it says it's from the series Memories of from Today's Grown Up Kids. I hope you might click on that because then you're going to see all five books. And all the all five of the themes, you know, that we did. And, you know, I guarantee there's probably something in there that you're going to like. That's where you'll find it. And then, like I said, for news, you go to Facebook and you go to the Jim Beard and Becky Books page. You can also go to the Flinch Books page. And this is brand new. You can go to flinchbooks.com.
Wow.
Yes. We have finally arrived. You know,
we know that feeling.
You know, John and I finally have a website and we're very, very, very proud of it. And that has a contact form in there that, you know, that we see messages. You can message me through the Facebook page. If you go to X, you can find me at writer Jim Beard. You can, you know, send me messages there. And, you know, for reviews, obviously Amazon or Goodreads, you know, I know there are other review platforms. I just really don't. I'm not that familiar with them. Those are really the two that I, you know, try to look at the most.
Okay. Alan, where can people find more of you?
Hey, you can go to cosmiccreative.com and you can check out all my books that I have published. For other writers and for myself and the podcast that I am involved in.
Many, many podcasts.
How about you, Keith?
You can find me on X and Facebook, primarily the ESO Network Facebook groups.
How about us, Veronica?
Feltnerdy.com, yep. Which is a website now. Yay!
That's right.
yay!
And you can find us on social media at Feltnerdy or for our adult content, Feltnerdy and Dirty. That's on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And then where else can they find us, Veronica?
Monkeying Around, podcast about the monkeys.
Yep, and do you have a closing for us this week?
Yay!
Let's go gallop around the cosmos.
Hey, I'll take it. Well, thank you everyone for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
For joining us. Join us on Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll be going live talking about legacy Star Trek topics, or as of April the 4th, we'll be talking about new Star Trek as it airs. So join us on YouTube or Facebook. And thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun on our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.